Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. I don't know why I just amused myself. It is Saturday, the 9th of December, Anno Domini 2017, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, here comes the news.
Must be our age, easily amused.
Oh, yeah, man, I've always been easily amused. I used to say when I'd be up on stage, I'll do a joke for one person, even if it's me. many major U.S. airlines have announced restrictions on so-called smart luggage out of concern that their lithium-ion batteries may pose a fire risk. Smart luggage tends to contain a USB port for charging devices, GPS to track the bag's location, remote locking, built-in weight sensors. Some even sport a motor to propel the bag for ease of movement through an airport. These features, of course, all require power that is often supplied by built-in lithium-ion batteries, which contain, of course, as we all know, highly flammable liquids. Did you know that about your lithium-ion batteries? All the devices that you carry around, those batteries are full of a highly flammable liquid.
Yeah, that's what they said about my Note 7.
Yes, that is what they said about your Note 7. Worries about the batteries, that the batteries could cause a fire in the cargo hold that would go undetected has caused airlines to institute new rules that require flyers to remove the batteries when they check their luggage and carry them into the passenger cabin. Are you carrying a potential bomb? Don't leave it in the baggage hold. Carry it in the plane. Beginning January 15th, customers who travel with a smart bag must be able to remove the battery in case the bag has to be checked at any point in the customer's journey. If the battery cannot be removed, the bag will not be allowed, American Airlines said in a statement. Delta and Alaska soon followed suit with similar policies on their flights. In the past couple of years, the use of lithium-ion batteries has been linked to fires and spewing smoke in a slew of products, including, of course, Samsung's now infamous and now canceled Galaxy Note 7. Hoverboards and Boeing's 787 Dreamliner. Yes, the entire plane was banned because of the lithium-ion batteries. Yeah. The Federal Aviation Administration issued a warning about the batteries last year, urging airlines to examine the risks associated with transporting lithium batteries as cargo, including the potential risk for a catastrophic hull loss. The alert covered batteries being transported as components and not those already inside devices such as laptops, tablets, phones, or hoverboards. However, many bags have batteries that can't be removed, and that has smart luggage makers like BlueSmart worried. We are saddened by these latest changes to some airline restrictions and feel it is a step back, not only for travel technology, but that it also presents an obstacle to streamlining and improving the way we all travel, BlueSmart said. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Lithium-ion batteries banned on many airlines, and your choices are very sensible. A little overboard, I think. Get it? Never mind. Dumbest thing I ever heard, and I never go anywhere anyways. So far, we have about 27 votes. Thank you. And I know you'll have more to say, so if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums, and the second forum down is the poll discussion, and currently, at least, the first poll discussion is 9 December 17, lithium-ion batteries banned on many airlines. And once you've vented your spleen there, or perhaps just vented the gases from your battery, you can... You can, of course, join us here by calling 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That was the first thing I thought of when I read the story is, okay, you have to take the battery out of your checked bag and carry it on. What happens then if it swells and is about to explode? You're going to open the door and throw it out?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I get it. Yeah,
this is their logic. I don't get.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Or an airplane's now going to have a LiPo fire safe to throw it into.
Oh, there's an idea.
Well, how many LiPo batteries are in the airplane already?
Right.
Running things.
Well, yeah. the 787 Dreamliner,
yeah.
They banned the whole plane because of the lithium-ion batteries. But it's all fixed now, and it's theoretically back in service.
Supposedly.
I don't pay much attention to that. But that's, I understand it, and lithium-ion batteries are in everything. There are some possible advancements, at least in the lab right now, to batteries that are both smaller and lighter and more powerful and last mm-hmm. longer
don't use a flammable polymer.
Exactly.
Actually, one of the newest ones I read about uses asphalt
yeah.
as the binder, which is weird because, you know, you drive on that every day. You wouldn't think that would make a very good battery.
Well, apparently
it's
it does.
Strong enough.
Well,
yeah,
it binds the pieces together so the electrolyte works, and it's I didn't do it that time. Putting asphalt in allows the battery to not have that flammable electrolyte.
Right.
And it also lets them use lithium metal, which gives you more energy density than the lithium ion, which was safer.
Right, which was safer. Right, right, right. And now this would be
so
better.
What we have now is safer than the first alternative.
Right. The problem is I kind of expect that a concrete battery is going to be a little heavier. And,
well, if they can just get the material that binds it, though, and find other alloys.
Oh, the One Ring.
The what?
The One Ring.
The One Ring will bind them all. Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I do think that we'll find that the binder, that the concrete will be a slightly heavier battery, but I would assume that most companies will accept that as a necessary evil compared to batteries that explode.
Mm-hmm. One more thing.
You know, well, let's
hey,
see.
You're
a little
burning.
Bit, a little bit of weight and no explosion versus lighter, possible explosion. Well, yeah, fire anyway, not explosion, but fire.
Well, I've read that if somebody tried to patent the internal combustion engine running on gasoline now, it would never make it through the safety standards.
No, it would never do.
You're driving around with 20 gallons of extremely flammable and explosive fuel in the back of your car.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Usually under the rear seats.
See, yeah.
Yep. We'll see what they come up with. I would love to see better battery technology. For me, the more important part is a higher energy density, which means a longer lived battery.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get a battery that weighs, 6 ounces, maybe even 8 ounces more, mm-hmm. but lasts twice as long and is safer, who would say no to that?
Yeah.
You know, so I get it.
Plus,
Apple, of course.
But also, if they can just come up with something, which a number of the phones are, that they take less time to recharge. So if they get down, you know, you could quickly plug it in and do like a supercharge. You
right.
know, take a boost it right back on up quickly.
Right. Well, nobody really, because it's only happening in the labs right now, nobody really knows what a lithium concrete battery is.
Yeah.
Whatever they're going to call the thing. What it does or what it has.
Right, and it sounds very heavy, but who knows?
Yeah. Or how fast it'll recharge or, mm-hmm. How long it'll last. But that's what they're working on, and we'll see.
To be determined.
One of the companies that is trying to market the solid polymer batteries, they had a demo. There was a Nova show we've talked about a couple of times. They had a demo where they took a pair of scissors with a battery, you know, running a tablet, and started cutting pieces of the battery off. And it worked fine.
Yep.
And it just kept running. The big thing with today's lithium batteries, because of the liquid polymer, a liquid electrolyte being so flammable, that you drop it and you risk puncturing the battery case. And then the runaway energy, trying to release all that energy at once. You've probably seen YouTube videos where someone, you know, pounds a nail into a battery or a drill. Don't do that.
Yeah, right.
Because it explodes very violently.
Right.
But yeah, so with the solid polymers and the non-flammable electrolytes, that's going to be a lot better.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot safer. So we'll see what that all comes out with, but it'll be years before it happens, and that's how that goes. Well, we should probably slide on over to the phones and talk to Alan from Webster, New York. Hi, Alan. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I called you guys a couple months ago, gave you a chuckle with my 7-year-old desktop system, so I did buy a new one.
Oh, good.
And I bought a Dell XPS 910 with a Starlake processor, Windows 10 Pro, 16 gigabyte of RAM, and a 2 terabyte hard drive. So I've started taking off the bloatware. I put Revo uninstaller on. I use Malwarebytes and Super Any Spyware. So my question is there any general advice since I have a clean new system? And the other thing is backup software and strategy.
One other piece that I would recommend is, did you say you have the Revo uninstaller?
Yep, okay, on first.
Yep, that's, no, for the most part, you're good there. One thing you might want to consider to make your life a little bit easier is both of those products that you put on, both Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes, have paid versions. And, you know, we recommend these freebies, but you know what? To do more features and keep them, this product up to date, it's always good, which we've been advocates for the longest time, in supporting these small companies that keep these products and they keep your machine safe. Because right now, if I had to judge it, I would say 90% of the stuff, I'd go as far as 95% of the stuff out there is either spyware or malware. Maybe only 5% is virus.
And it's typically old viruses that are still running around.
Yeah, they're trying to recreate them. All the other stuff is spyware and malware, and that's why you need those two products.
But I would still suggest you run an antivirus program.
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, definitely.
I forgot. I used Norton, the suite.
Okay, Norton.
Yep.
Right.
All of that is good. The only other thing I would suggest is now that you have a brand new machine, now is the time to institute a brand new backup policy.
So that's what I'm going to say. What do you recommend? So, Windows backup software versus something like Ease US to do free software, and I was planning on using, I take photographs, so I have two 8-terabyte hard drives, external, plus a bunch of other small ones, four terabytes. So what's your recommendation?
Cloud for Google Photos is the – I love Google
Photos. Yeah, Google Photos. Well,
and then it gets it off-site, which is good.
I can take 120 gigabytes of photos in a day at an air show.
Yeah, so the reality is that if you save them – in the what they call high definition format, which is a maximum of 16 gig,
right?
It takes up zero space as far as Google is concerned. It does not count against your space. I have 15,000 photos in Google Photos, and they take no space.
16 megapixels, and you're
16
good to
megapixels
go.
Are slower or smaller. So let's say you take 20 or 25 megapixel photos. You can use Google Drive as an extra backup. You get a slightly lower resolution, but 90% of the time nowadays, people are sending them around via tablets and desktops and phones anyway. So it's not like anybody's going to notice the slight reduction in resolution. The other thing I would suggest you do is have multiple backups. So you want to have an on-site backup and an off-site backup.
Okay.
One of the things that you want to do is you've now got one backup, which is on your hard drive. That's it. So if you also use Google Photos, that's two, and one of them is off-site.
Right.
And if you then also back it up to the hard drive on your machine, that's three, but now two of them are in the same place. So if you have, for example, God forbid, a house fire,
right,
You lose it. Listen, we got to take a break. Stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. Steve Ray has joined us. Very nice of you to show up, Steve. Alan from Webster and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Alan from Webster, New York, on the line. You still there, Alan?
Yeah, sure am.
Okay. Steve had some interesting things to say about... backup.
Yeah, one of the things that we run into a lot in our repair shop is people bring in their backup drive. So they back up to an external USB hard drive, which is okay. But then they delete the file from their main drive and think that's okay, and it's not. So they bring in their backup drive and say, my backup drive failed. I need you to recover my photos. And so, well, this is your backup drive, so just use your original. Oh, I deleted them. Then it's not a backup anymore. You want to have two copies of your stuff. So if one drive fails, you have another drive, at least two.
Well, let me.
And a lot of places call that the 3-2-1 backup. Three copies of your data on two different media, and one of them should be offsite.
Right. And in terms of offsite, one of the nice things that you can use is a product called Carbonite.
Yep, I know about it.
Okay, good. And for everybody else, it's $60 a year. It does automatic backup to the cloud. It's unlimited storage. You can also back up external drives. And, of course, you can get remote access to your files. Now, that's a beautiful thing. And the reason it's beautiful is that first word, automatic. The real problem with backup strategies is when you make them manual, they will fail because you're human.
I had a machine this morning where I plugged the hard drive, internal hard drive died. She gave me her backup drive. I plug it in. The last automatic backup she ran was August 2010.
2010, yeah. Yeah, so you need to have automated backup because the computer will not skip one because it's tired, or it'll get to it tomorrow, or whatever excuse you normally give. So you want to have automated backup. Now, what that means, of course, is you might want to leave your computer on all the time. But at the desktop, that's not a big deal.
Especially for the first, you know, like week that it will take to upload everything.
Right.
And then
right.
It just does changed files, which is fast.
Right.
Right.
But I would
another question on the on a recovery drive. I've made two to the flash drive. Now that I've loaded all the applications and customized Windows 10 the way I want, should I go back and remake the recovery drive,
yes,
or doesn't it matter?
Yes. Yes, you should go back and remake the recovery drive.
And I might even make it on a different set of media, so you can have a clean Windows recovery, and then you can have all my basic stuff recovery.
Right, thumb drives are cheap.
The recovery drive is on a flash drive. The backups are on the... external drives so far.
Now, one thing about flash drives, they're cheap. Some of them are too cheap, and they fail.
You're right.
So check it every now and then.
Or something like that.
Yeah, some of the better brand names. So if you put your important file on a flash drive and you got it free with your box of Wheaties, check it every now and then. Make sure it's still there.
Right. Well, I have two, so,
All right.
I think that's about it. So,
okay.
I appreciate your advice.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, have a good one, guys.
Have fun. There's.
Are we allowed to talk about that?
No.
Okay. I have it in my pocket, but we can't talk about it yet.
Right. It's important. Backup is important. We've talked about this many times. As computers get more sophisticated, as we use them for more things, as they inveigle their way into our entire lives, we have to be system administrators now. We used to just be able to use our computers. Now we have to manage our computers. And if you don't manage them, you're going to be that person who comes to somebody like Dave or Steve and says, my computer died and I don't have a backup. What do we do?
Yeah.
Start crying now.
And we put everything on it. And people always ask us, well, why did it fail? Things break. especially with spinning hard drives. we you know, the spinning mechanical things fail. We thought SSDs would be better, but the way SSDs work, it damages the cell to write data to it. So companies like Backblaze and Google, who use trillions of drives, have found out that SSDs fail at a rate of about 20% per year.
And the other thing that folks do,
just like hard drives.
Just like hard drives, yeah. they may be fast, but they fail just as fast, too.
But what some folks will get very complacent in doing, too, is, you know, they say they get this laptop, and they see the two partitions.
Oh, yeah.
So they start backing
and
stuff.
And they think it's actually a separate drive.
Yeah, they throw it up to the D drive. Well, that was, yeah, there was a lot of space. I backed it up to there. That's my where my backup is after the hard drive dies.
Yep.
And they don't quite realize it's all the same drive. They just cut it in half, or say a third of it went to the backup part, and the rest of it you use. So when that hard drive dies, it dies, and those backups that you thought you put in a safe place, they went too.
They're gone too.
And because laptops are so common these days, people forget to plug in their backup drive.
Yep.
So having your own local cloud backup, Western Digital has a product called MyCloud, Apple's Airport Time Capsule, or any network-attached storage drive, a NAS drive, you can back up to that drive on your network wirelessly, wherever your laptop happens to be. And you can back up the multiple computers you probably have in your house to that one bigger drive.
Right.
And you don't have to remember to plug it in every time.
Right.
We hear that a lot in our store. I, you know, my last backup was 2 months ago because I forgot to plug it in since then.
Yep, and that's why we say something like Carbonite is automatic and happens on the web. If you're connected to the network, which everybody always is, you'll have a backup. So that's why we recommend something like that. And it's only $60 a year, and the question becomes, how important are your data to you?
Yeah.
If you don't care if you lose them, then great, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, let it die.
Would here's the cry? One thing that I can't stress enough, though, is save the pictures, the documents, the photos, and all that other stuff. As far as programs, forget it.
You don't have to save
them. You don't have to back up your programs. It does you no good, because if your system crashes, those programs just can't be copied over. They have to be reinstalled with the original software back into the system. So don't waste your time or effort. Because I had one person get very ticked at me because, well, I backed it up. So the software's there. I go, no, you don't understand. Where are the disks? I don't have the disks. I don't know where the heck I put them.
Well, that's I don't have the disks anymore. Or I downloaded that software.
Right. Which probably means you downloaded
and that's
it illegally.
Well, if you just put it back over there, it should work, right? Yeah. I go, no, you don't understand. When it doesn't install, it makes entries into the registry.
Look, software, when you install it, leaves files all over your hard drive like a rabbit.
That's why you need a special uninstaller.
That's why you need a special uninstaller. And when you have a problem, you can't just put it back. And here's the other thing. Half the time when a computer dies, it's because there's a problem in the registry. So if I just restore your last backup, I'm restoring that same problem again.
Mm-hmm.
And you might get a few days out of it, or you might get a few weeks out of it before it dies again.
And then it's going to die again, and then it's our fault. Whatever you did was wrong. No.
It's not still broken. It's broken again. There's a difference.
Yeah, right. There's a difference.
And even on the Mac, where we don't have a registry, there's still the application support folder,
right?
Where all of those other little files get thrown into, and the launch agents folder. How many people? I had one last week. There were programs I'd installed and removed years ago. There was still a launch agent trying to open at startup, trying to load this Fitbit that they don't own anymore.
Right.
Well, the program's still trying to load because it wasn't uninstalled properly.
And right.
The other thing too that folks are getting a little ticked at is, you know, we can do up, and I know Steve runs into this too. We can do cleanups on Windows 7 machines. But the minute it walks out of that shop with you, it goes out of the shop with you, you're walking out with it, go home and hook it up,
all bets are off
is what we did. Because you know what? That program is outdated, folks. outdated. They no longer support it. So you know what? You're on your own. Yes, you can sit there and do this, but you're still, depending on what site you go to, there are still the holes in that operating system, and they're going to get reinfected.
And yeah. Some of our cleaning tools now don't support Windows 7 anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I just finished a PC for a customer this morning. It was running Windows 10, originally came with Windows 7, had almost 10,000 malware objects on it. Mm-hmm. And they wondered why it was running slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I had one with, I think it was 6,338.
Yeah.
Something like that. And wondering, yeah, like you say, running slow. Temp files. Had wondering why his hard drive was full. Had over 70 gig of temp files.
Windows is one supposed thing, to delete those.
So. And then right. He's wondering why he can't save mail, and he was trying to add a contact, and the contact list got smashed. Well, yeah, because there's no space to resave it.
Right.
So it bites the big one, and there you go.
Windows is very good. Microsoft's Office is very good at saving files, very bad at deleting its temp files.
Extremely.
And sometimes the temp files are invisible, so you can't find them.
Well, right. And
yeah, that's what's taking all the space in my folder?
Right. And that's why having the right tools to do that stuff is a good idea. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I can't. Oh, two things. One thing I cannot boast enough about Kobe and backup.
Sure.
I think it's great. I think it's great. It works great. You can set a schedule. It's a free program, and it works spectacular.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're looking for a backup program, you go, oh, I can't find one. Well, Cobian's pretty decent if you want a local backup.
Well, and that's the big thing. That is local backup.
Yep.
Right? And so it doesn't meet the 3-2-1 rule, but it is a very nice product.
Well, it's one of the two.
Right.
And then you need another one of the two.
Right.
Actually, you could do a 4-3-2-1 backup because I've got, like I told you before, I've got that safe specifically made for fire, water.
Yep.
And it's got the hard drive built right into it.
There are data-ready. Yeah, data-ready fire safes that have a USB port.
Yep.
And that becomes your local but still fire-resistant.
Fire, water, it can survive in the, I think they said on there, like 20 feet of water for 24 hours.
Yep. Yep, so, pretty amazing stuff that they've got out there.
Yeah, and really a lot of cool. People.
The other thing I wanted to say is 3-4 years ago, I bought a used computer from a gentleman that had Windows 7 on it. It was an old Dell Optiplex 745.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that originally had maybe XP on it. And then he upgraded it to 7. Then it upgraded to 10. Then it upgraded to both the creator's updates. And it's only running 4 gigs of memory, but we only really use that for my kids to do their writing their homework on, like an office, you know, or, you know, that's all it really gets used for. It doesn't get used for anything other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a gateway here from 2012 that I can't get it to update to any of the creator's updates, but yet this thing, updated with a breeze.
Well, a lot of it has to do, we're finding, with drivers.
I couldn't believe that old computer must be running some sort of hardware that's very, very popular.
Well, and very generic, right?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. If you've got a device, some device in your system that is either not very generic or discontinued, or I suppose both, updating will be iffy at best and possibly impossible. That's why we always tell people make sure that your drivers are up to date before you do any sort of Windows update. Make sure you've downloaded the latest versions and installed them, or at least have them ready to install if you're moving from 7 to 10 or whatever, because Windows is not good at third-party drivers.
Right.
And never has been. So you may find that other machine is upgradable once you download all the right set of drivers.
Yeah, I think there's a video driver problem with the gateway.
Yep.
And I updated to the latest drivers they had for it, but still, it gets so far it reboots and I get a blank screen and I can't see anything.
Yep,
it's that just is a blank screen, and no matter what I do with that video driver, I cannot get it to update. It's just stuck at the original Windows 10 update.
Yep, we see that more often than not, and either finding the right driver, or it is very possible with a machine that's fairly old, there is no updated driver, and so the only thing you can do at that point is either not upgrade or change the video card.
Yeah, it's onboard video, so I was thinking maybe buying a fairly inexpensive video card, a new one.
As long as it works with Windows 10, you're good.
Yeah, and see if it'll upgrade, because the computer still runs really nice.
Right.
It would be a shame to get rid of it.
Right.
For something like that, but I can't believe that Optiplex.
Well, like I said, we see that a lot. A lot of very old machines and inexpensive machines, which the Dell was.
Yeah.
Are generic enough that they can be upgraded much more easily than some of the newer machines.
Yeah. Well, thank you, guys.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I'm going to hit back up one more time. What a great Christmas present it is to give yourself...
Or someone you love.
Or someone you love the gift of backup. You know, $60 for a year for Cobian gives them off-site backup.
Cobian is free.
No, Cobian, right. Cobian is the on-site, is the local backup. But if you, for $60 for
Carbonite. Or Backblaze, or there's several really good ones.
Right, there are several really good ones, and they're not terribly expensive. And what a great gift it is to say to somebody, I got you this, now back up your stinking computer.
Yep. Would you cry if you lost everything on your computer? Would your wife kill you if you lost all the photos
right.
you have?
Well, but that's the big thing, of course. We used to get back photos and negatives from a place, and you keep them all in a mm-hmm. drawer. And yes, if there was a house fire, that would be a problem. But otherwise, you could make all the copies you wanted. Yeah. Your grandkids could get them, et cetera, et cetera.
If you lose one, you can make it from the other.
You make it from the other.
So you have a sort of backup already.
Right. But now everything is being taken on your phone, and we delete them from the phone because, you know, it's got to be you don't have space anymore on your phone.
Yep.
So the ability to, and that's the nice thing about Android phones, you can automatically have them upload to Google Photos.
I use Google Photos on my Apple phone.
And Apple phone, people do because it's so incredibly convenient.
And backup also includes your phone.
Right.
Because your photos, your contacts, notes you take, they should be backed up. And all Android and Apple phones will sync up to the cloud automatically. But turn that on. Make sure you're doing it.
That's why I say, and when I got my new computer box, I was able to, you know, I didn't have to worry about my bookmarks, my email, or anything else. I just logged into my Google account. Boom, everything was there.
Yep.
All the bookmarks that I used, emails were still there. I didn't have to worry about any of that.
Right. And those things should be backed up as well. Yeah. Do you back up your email? If your answer is, I think so, you don't.
Right.
Do you back up your bookmarks?
Just never delete it from your inbox.
Well, right.
Then it's backed up on the server-ish.
Ish. Do you back up your bookmarks? If you were to lose all your bookmarks, would you be annoyed?
No.
Or would you be lost? So all of those things are important and are part of a backup strategy.
We've got a customer now that lost their text messages when their phone died. And some of them were from a relative who's passed and never get them back.
So you're right. That's exactly
so
right.
So we're trying to extract them from a dead phone. And, that's
and the
really
contacts.
Hard.
If you lost your phone and lost all your contacts, how would you handle that?
Yep.
You know, particularly since for many of us nowadays, a lot of them will be business contacts,
mm-hmm.
Family members we've lost touch with, et cetera,
et cetera. People don't remember numbers. They just know.
Nobody does anymore.
They look up the name and boom. Yep. It dials it. They can sit there and say, okay, Google, you know, call this person or call that person.
I don't even know my own number. I have to look it up in my phone.
Oh, golly, Ned, that is the truth. And let me
I don't want you to call me. I don't know my number.
Right. And let me talk to all those listening to me today, listening to us, who are saying, you know, he's right. We should back up more often. What are you doing just sitting there? Start a backup now.
Yeah.
If you're sitting at your computer, start a backup. If you're out on the road, don't do it now, but when you pull over, write yourself a reminder in your calendar, make a date, make an appointment to do a backup tonight when you get home.
Well, it's just like I said, I've told a lot of folks. You know, they say about running the spyware or malware programs. You do that, say, at dinner or the evening. Just before you're going to bed, you start the procedure and turn off the monitor. You can do that the same with backup.
Yep.
You can start the backup just before you go to bed. And, yeah, it's just going to go and back it up to wherever you want. And you can come down the following morning. It's done. Turn it off. Pack the hard drive away or whatever you're using. And you're covered.
I have a routine that I've set up on my computer. First, it does the antivirus scans and all the malware scans and that stuff. And I know how long that's going to take.
Yep.
When that's done, it kicks off my backup to the cloud. And I know how long that's going to take. And when that's done, it kicks off the backup to my local offline storage. And I know how long that's going to take. And then I back it up to an actual real second hard drive on my computer, and I know how long that's going to take. So I know when each one is going to start and stop within 15 minutes, right? I give myself some leeway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so by the time I get up the next morning, I've got backups done, and I've got them in several places.
And it was already done for you just because it's taking up the initial
and it's automated. And
to set it all up, make it happen. No, it just does.
And I did that once. And now here's how I back up. I don't turn my computer off. Oh, okay.
But every now and then, check to make sure that it's running.
And I do every week. I have a reminder on Sunday afternoons. Check that your backups worked.
Yep.
And that's important to do, and you need to do that. All right.
Yeah, because so many people get complacent and think, oh, yeah, it's backing up, and they don't bother ever checking.
Right. Always if you haven't checked, you haven't backed up. Mm-hmm. That's simple enough. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Hamlin, New York. Thanks for waiting, Paul. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a Dell Inspiron 2305, and recently either Mozilla did their Quantum and it downloaded automatically, and now it looks like it's in safe mode every time it starts up the display.
Okay, so this is running Windows 10?
Yes, I'm running Windows 10.
So what you likely had happen was an update that screwed up your, this is what we were talking about earlier, that screwed up your video driver.
Right.
So the best thing to do is you have a Dell, that's a good thing. On Dell's support site, you go to Dell.com and click on support. You can type in either your serial number or
service
what are they
tag.
Called? Service tag number. Thank you very much. I never remember what that's called. You type in your service tag number and it'll tell you all of the drivers you need for your machine.
Okay.
So you can download them and update them, and then theoretically that will solve your issue.
And did this computer come with Windows 10, or did you upgrade to it?
I upgraded to it when it was the free issue.
So on that Dell support page for your model, it will give you Windows 10 upgrade tips, and there may have been something that the auto upgrade didn't do.
Right, and like I said, we see this all the time. Microsoft is not good with third-party drivers. And so it is on you to make sure that those drivers get updated.
All right. Well, I'll do that, and I appreciate it. And you guys do a great show. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
So
some people are tempted to never install the updates so you don't run into problems, but then you don't have the security fixes.
Right.
I wish... Well, Microsoft has their critical updates, and Apple calls them security updates. Install the security updates, and maybe don't install the optional updates or some of the other things.
But then that means you again manually have to go through and figure out which one is which, and people just put that off.
Windows 10 now, they've made it hard to not install the updates because they really want you to push those critical updates in.
Yep.
One, so that you have the most up to date patches and for all the vulnerabilities that are out there, And secondly, it makes it easier for developers. You're trying to write a Windows program. Do you write it for Windows 10 or Windows 7 or Windows 8 or Windows XP? And if you only write it for Windows 10, how many millions of people will you leave out of your program?
Yep.
And then so it makes it all the much harder to write it for the older. And if you write it for Windows 7, that means you can't use some of the cool Windows 10 features.
That's right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hi, Pat. What's up?
Well, just a couple of things. I'm going to ask you a question in a moment, but the topic
we only have a few minutes before we're done with the show, so maybe you want to get to the question.
I just want to say, well, my wife got a new phone at work. They asked about contacts, and do you have an update? And she didn't say anything. The office admin said she's blind. She has all her contacts memorized.
Right.
Oh, nice.
So, but anyway, quick question is, there was a... A friend of mine said there was a program that she got that automatically updated drivers. Do you know anything about that? Anyone that you would recommend?
Yes, there are a number of those, and no, we don't recommend any of them because most of them are not comprehensive.
Okay, so they'll do a half-cheap job.
Yeah. Right, right. Okay. It's not that they're bad. They're just...
Incomplete.
Incomplete. Yeah, that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, the one in Windows is kind of the best one there are.
Right. There are, like I said, there are a number of them, but they don't, I suppose if you ran three or four different ones, that, but,
maybe.
Yeah, but no.
Yeah, it's like everything that's easy just doesn't really work.
Right, exactly.
Well, the old-fashioned elbow grease.
Right, and that's what's lovely about sites like Dell and a couple of others.
With a name brand computer, there's one site to go to.
Right, so you can go right there, and they know what was put in your... Now, if you change something, then that's on you.
Right,
but for most people, you buy a Dell... Well, obviously, you buy a Dell laptop. You're not going to change any of the hardware that's in it. And many Dell desktops, people don't change the hardware that's in it.
Dude, you got a Dell?
Yeah. well, that was... Paul had a Dell Inspiron. Yeah. And so you can go right to Dell's website and go to the support place, put in your service tag, and boom, you're done.
Yeah, but the name brands, Dell, HP, Toshiba.
Right, they all do this, and it makes life easier for everybody. It's not 100% automated, of course. You still have to do the installation yourself, but it's still better than...
So you go to their website to see if there's any updates? Is that
basically the way it works is you go to the support site for that manufacturer, and they ask you to put in the service number or the tag number or the whatever it happens to be, the serial number. They all do it a little differently. And it tells you, it knows what was put in your machine when it was built.
So you
and it gives you all the drivers for those things.
Right. So you don't have to go to the Ethernet company separately, from the video card company separately, from the motherboard company separately, from the audio board company.
You still have to do the install, but it gives you all those drivers.
Does it check your machine somehow to see if it's current, or do you?
No, it strictly has a database of what was put in that machine when it was built, which is why I say if you changed something, now it's on you.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Have fun, Pat.
Yep.
We'll see it.
This is, of course, another reason we recommend Chromebooks. They just are easy. But the fact is that one of the things we have to be very aware of now is drivers. That was not an issue when 95 or XP was the machine, or even 7 was the thing. But the minute we went to 8, and certainly for up to 10, they changed a lot of the underlying architecture, which meant the drivers changed, which means you will run into trouble eventually, sooner or later. You will run into trouble. So we recommend that before you do an upgrade, we've been saying this for years, before you do an upgrade, gather up all of your drivers. And after an upgrade, every once in a while, check to see if there's new versions of drivers out. And as Pat said, it would be great if there were a program you could run that would do all that. Well, there's a dozen of them, but none of them is complete.
And they don't do it reliably.
So if you were to rely on one and it failed you, that's not a good thing.
It could mess up the whole machine.
It could mess up the whole machine.
Especially if it puts in the wrong video driver, and they're thinking, oh, well, it's close enough.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're staring at a black screen.
Right. That's exactly right. So that's why we recommend, particularly for those of you who have one of the name brand machines to do it that way.
Or from a local vendor, they often will have a driver update service they can do for you.
Right.
Because they know what they put in it.
Right. And when you if you build your own machine or you have it built by a local vendor, ask for a list of those devices. They will provide that to you. And then you can then go to each of those manufacturers and look for the latest on those devices. It's an easy thing to forget, but it is something you have to do if you want to maintain the integrity of your computer. And as we use our computers more and more, then we definitely have to worry about maintaining that integrity. And again, before Dave says it, I will say that it is so much easier with a Chromebook. You can do 99% of what you want to do without thinking ever.
Yeah.
Without thinking. That's why it's one of the many reasons I use a Chromebook. I did this for 20 years professionally, and now I like the fact that I don't have to do it on my Chromebook. I still do it on my Linux box. I still do it on my Windows laptop that I take to classes. But and that becomes more and more of an annoyance.
Remember when it used to be fun to tinker with your computer?
Yes, I do. I do remember that. Well, I may be old, but I'm not that old. I remember that.
Yeah, a number of folks, they're sitting there and wondering. Well, I want to get. Matter of fact, I've got one friend that runs a business, and we got talking, and he says, "Well, I got to think about getting another computer." I said, "Well, then get a Chromebook." Chromebook? I said, "Yeah, $200-$300." It'll do everything that you want to do. You surf the internet, check your email, and work with photos, right? Yeah. Chromebook.
Chromebook it is. And that's you know, I just finished a book called Chromebooks for Seniors. And I know a lot of people who are talking about buying Chromebooks for their folks so that they don't have to be the tech support person.
Change a few words in it and make it Chromebook for middle schoolers and Chromebooks for young adults. And
all right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but hang on, because we're going to do it all over again on the other side. So relax for a couple of minutes, and we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is only 59 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. What's that, you may say? Why, it's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour. The second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right.
The second hour today.
The second hour today of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. It's right here on the lovely, charming Jazz 90.1.
Well, we should continue, you know, because a lot of folks, of course, they can't hear what's going on after, you know, once we go on break here.
And that's good.
Yeah. Because, we're getting into the discussion right now that more and more folks are finding ways to cut the cord.
That's right.
And there's another incentive coming up if you have Time Warner or Spectrum cable, cable TV, and you don't have a box now, so you've just got coax plugged straight into your television.
And the tuner's right in the TV.
The tuner's in the TV. Spectrum is going to encrypt all of the channels next month, we're hearing.
Scramble them.
So your TV's going to go dark. And you're going to have to rent a box from Spectrum for $6 a month in order to watch those channels on a TV that doesn't already have a Time Warner Spectrum box connected to it already.
Yeah, and I have coming up on 2 years now that I've cut the cord, and I got to admit, I don't miss it one bit. You know, I've got, like you said, the HD antenna. It's, you can hardly see it. I got it hanging on the window, so I get all my local channels, 8, 10, 13, and the CW, and even some others. There's others around that you can watch, and it's like, yeah, no, I don't watch it.
Bounce TV and things like that. Right, right.
Yeah, and then there's also, I then go to my Roku box, and right. I have Sling, and I can subscribe to that, which only costs me $30 a month, $29.99.
Right.
And I get all the channels along with this other package that I added on, the Hallmark channels and the DIY type of stuff.
And there are now ways to do essentially what you can do with a DVR, right? So on a DVR, you can record stuff to watch later, or you can do on demand and that stuff. The same concepts can be done with these boxes if you know what you're doing how to get to the stuff.
The internet is your on demand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's there. And it's cheaper. And that's what people are getting tired of because, you know, the cable companies and all that say, no, you got to accept this. And it's this package. Well, you don't want sports or you didn't want the QVC channels and all that. Too bad. That's in the bundle.
The one thing I have found is that the cable TV is the easiest and most convenient.
Right.
Which is usually true. The more you spend, the more convenient it is.
Right.
I recently cut down on my cable package and took off digital tier 2. Of the 300 channels on tier 2, the only two that I missed were Comedy Central and Science Channel.
Right.
And so, that's no big deal. I watch on the internet. So I'm binge watching the new Mythbusters, Science Channel on my Apple TV.
Yep.
But then when I went to go watch South Park, the previous episodes are locked to the Time Warner subscription. You can only watch the latest episode for free.
Oh, interesting.
Trevor Noah, I usually watch on YouTube anyway. So,
right.
The talk shows. So that's what makes it tricky is that even the networks that do offer online streaming, sometimes you still have to pay that network to get the previous episode. So you can watch the current episode for free, but if you missed last week's and want to watch it, then you got to pay to get that.
Right.
So it's some of the networks, they don't keep all the episodes for all season. So you still have to kind of keep up with it.
Right.
But you can do it and never pay for cable TV again. Just your internet service.
It's just a different, you have to create new habits, and that's hard for people.
You learn your shows by the network they're on, not the channel number anymore.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was like teaching my wife how to use all the remotes. Yeah.
And
controls.
And it is very, very convenient to be able to sit down and say, what did I record? Oh, I'd like to watch that now. Yep. Oh, I'd like to watch that now. And I get that.
That was one of the big things that have slowed me down until I found an app. There's an app for that. I'll post a link to that shortly, that you put in the shows you want to watch. It gives you the episode lists. It lets you check off when you watched it, when the new episodes are coming up. It has a social aspect where people comment on the episode.
Nice.
And so that's my DVR list, and the internet is my DVR.
Nice. Very, very nice.
There you go.
Yep. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller, Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Couple of things to follow up on what Steve was just talking about with you know the way the networks are protecting their stuff. The CBS All Access and the way they're running that makes it, if you're a Star Trek fan, it makes it very difficult to watch the Discovery show or the new Star Trek Discovery.
Right,
and I have a feeling that's one of the reasons the ratings have been down. Other than the people that are watching it saying it's not Star Trek. It might be an interesting sci-fi show, but it's not Star Trek.
Right.
Is that the only way to watch it is on the $7 a month CBS All Access. And a lot of people don't want to pay the extra for another station.
Well, I'm already paying a fairly good cable bill because I bundled everything. So, the cable part of it was not really a deal breaker. I mean, it was because I had the internet through them. And we moved the phone off a copper wire into a VoIP situation. We were able to use No More Robo, and the peace and quiet from the from the harassing phone calls has been worth every penny I pay them for the entire service.
Yep.
It all of a sudden my wife's life is a lot easier and there's a lot less static in my house.
Yeah.
Because of it. But be that as it may. Questions today. I recently started, you had talked, I don't know whether it was here at a Google's meeting, about the fact that you do like the little Google surveys.
Yeah.
And I started doing it just for
Google
fun.
Google rewards.
And it's not really hard to do, and I think I've got a whole, I don't know, $2.50 in my bank.
I have rarely, I do a lot of them. There's a thing for everybody else. Google has a program called Rewards, and you take surveys, and they give you money. Not a lot of money, and the surveys are short.
And this is legitimate surveys, not the malicious ones that just fill your email with spam.
Or are trying to get at your personal information so they can steal your identity.
Yeah.
I saw another one the other day that was your birth date and your all this stuff.
Your
and
mother's maiden name.
Oh, and the last three or four digits of your phone number. I mean, come on. How do you even think that's legit? Anyway, here's the point. When you do a Google rewards thing, and it comes on your phone, and you just sign up, and it's free, they give you money, 10 cents, 15 cents, 20 cents. And I use that money to buy books on Google Play, and I don't think I paid for a book. No, I paid 38 cents yesterday for an $11 book.
You heathen.
Oh, you big spender, you.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead, okay. Now that I've explained what it is.
All right, the question is, I've got a couple bucks in there. You know, like you said, it's not a big deal. I mean, you get 15, 20 cents,
right.
8 cents. It's odd amounts, depending on what the question is.
Right.
I wanted to go buy your new book.
Thank you.
And can I use the Google rewards to do it?
No, because that's Amazon, and Google and Amazon do not like each other.
You got a news story coming up about that.
Yeah, Google and Amazon do not like each other, and the book is on Amazon.
Oh, boy.
So you're going to have to spend the actual 99 cents yourself. I'm sorry.
What would it take to get onto Google Books?
I don't know yet. I have not. But the problem is, Amazon is such a powerhouse, and they make it so easy to put your books up on it that it's hard to say no.
And it's probably exclusive.
And they prefer it's exclusive.
Yeah.
Right, so if it's exclusive, they do things for you, like promote it and put you on the KDP, which is the Kindle something program that lets people who want to read the book for free, but the user, the writer, still gets royalties. So if you're in the KDP program, my book is free, and I still get paid. So that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well. So much for that bright idea, but anyhow.
It's a great idea.
I thought I had a way to get the book without having to pay for it.
Yeah, sorry.
I think I can afford the 99 cents. But,
if you say so.
The next question, driver updates.
Uh-huh.
Okay. As you know, I built my own.
Yep.
Asus motherboard. Did not put a graphics card on it. Used the onboard graphics because it was more than adequate for what I needed. Has an HDMI out, which feeds my monitor perfectly. I don't game, so that was okay. Intel processor. Other than that, it's pretty straightforward.
Sure.
We get a Samsung SSD card in it and a Samsung 1 terabyte hard drive. And Corsair memory, which I don't think is affected by drivers. But so far, and I'm going to jinx myself to all get out here.
Yes, you are.
Because you know what I'm going to say. But so far, all the updates for Win 10, I built the box using 7 Pro, updated it to 10 Pro, have gone through the 10.1 and the creator updates, because I got it on Automagically updates. And so far, knock on wood, the Automagic part's been working.
Yep, and as we said earlier, if you have fairly generic devices that don't have any special requirements or special, slightly different drivers, then the automatic updates will work. And generally speaking, people who put together their own machines and aren't looking for a high-end graphics thing are going to find that their most of their components are generic enough that the update will work.
Okay. Because I was going to say, you know, I haven't had a problem so far. I mean, I've heard you talk about this for a couple of weeks now. I'm thinking, well, maybe it's time I go out to the ASUS website, put in my motherboard type, and see if they think there's, you know, updates available.
Certainly can't hurt.
And that's one of the other ways to make it easy for driver updates is you buy a motherboard with everything on it. So then you don't have to go separately to the Ethernet and Wi-Fi and audio and video. Everything's on
right.
one board.
And as Andy said, as long as you're not a gamer,
yeah,
that's certainly a thing you can do.
Gamer pays more for the video card than most of us pay for our whole PC.
That's right.
Well, yeah, that's true, but I can find enough ways to occupy my time. Video games has always just seemed like a one thrill I don't need. I'm also not very good at them.
Well, there's that, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My hand-eye coordination is really kind of horrible.
Yeah, I just don't have the patience for it. Anyhow, that's just me. And there's enough other things on my computer that I do with it that it suits my needs just fine. And I get yelled at for spending too much time on it now, so adding a video game component to it would probably get me in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, right.
But anyhow, I got the thing set on automatic updates, but drivers won't automatically update, so I should probably go out to ASUS.
No, some will. Some will, but it's always better to check.
Okay.
Always better, and you should do that. Okie doke.
All right, and I mean, I've been checking my router just because of other things that have been talked about lately, and that is set for automatic updates, and it says it's on the most recent version of firmware and software. So.
Right, so you should be good.
Well, yeah. not necessarily.
Good as you can be.
Good as you can be, yeah. That router may not have released a patch yet.
Right.
Well, yeah, but there's nothing I can do about that.
Right exactly.
I'm along for the ride on that one, whether I like it or not.
That's exactly right.
So, all right. Well, that sounds reasonable then. And I'll just have to go out and put the 99 cents in Amazon's coffers and hope you get your share.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Thanks.
No problem. I keep telling my wife that her next computer, when her HP laptop dies, is going to be a Chromebook.
And it should be.
And she keeps telling me, why would I do that? And I keep trying to explain to her that for what she does with a computer, a Chromebook is absolutely perfect.
Yep.
So far, she's not believing me.
And, well, the biggest thing is you can tell her is, one, starting probably next year, Windows, you're going to have to rent. You're going to be paying a yearly fee.
That's right.
And the Chromebook doesn't get viruses, doesn't get spyware, doesn't get malware. So you save a service call.
Well, the service call is, my damn computer isn't working anymore. Fix it.
Yeah, right. When the service call is honey,
yeah,
then it doesn't matter what the
doesn't,
service
doesn't
call
matter
is.
Who does the service call. It's still one less thing you have to do.
Yeah, right. Well, it if the computer's not working, it's not honey. It's, hey, you, my computer's not working. And that's the family-friendly version of it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, listen, we got to take a break.
All right, we'll let you take a break. You have a good day, sir.
All right, thanks. Have fun. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Rounding out several days of operating system updates included iOS 11.2, tvOS 11.2, watchOS 4.2, Apple rolled out macOS High Sierra 10.13.2. For supported Macs on Wednesday, you can download the update now from the Mac App Store. The update offers no new features. Rather, it is focused mostly on enterprise and security updates. You may not be in an enterprise, but you need security. Customer-facing changes includes improved compatibility with some third-party USB devices, accessibility changes like improved voiceover navigation and preview, and Braille in the Mail app. The enterprise updates improve keychain performance and fix a few bugs. As for the security updates, macOS 10.13.2 includes a permanent fix for the widely reported and previously addressed root user credentials bug, several issues related to the Intel graphics driver, mail app encryption issues, and more. This is the second major update to macOS High Sierra which after 10.13.1, which addressed the crack Wi-Fi vulnerability, added new emojis, and fixed several bugs. It also improved performance when using credentials stored in the keychain to access SharePoint websites that use NTLM authentication, which, unless you're in a business, you probably don't do, and resolves an issue that prevented the Apple Mac Store, the Mac App Store and other processes invoked by launch daemons from working on networks that use proxy information to find in a pack file. That's a lot of geekery, but it's important. If you change your Active Directory user password outside of users and groups preferences, the new password can now be used to unlock your file vault volume. Previously, only using the old password would do that. This update also improves compatibility with SMB home directories. That's Windows, basically Windows home directories, Windows directories. When the SharePoint contained a dollar sign in the name, a lot of people were having issues with that. And that's all fixed. So have you installed the update already? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I almost think we've had a lot of customers have problems with the 10.13.2 update.
No, he hung up.
That was before the break.
I told you about the other one.
Oh, he's a different guy.
Different guy, yeah. Sorry. We've had several customers with problems with the 10.13.2 update. It install some stuff, then it reboots and installs some more stuff. We've had a lot of people where after it never reboots and never finishes installing more stuff. So we have to go in and boot with another hard drive and install the update again. And I just checked on my computer, and it's not offering me the update. So part of me is thinking maybe there was an issue and they've held it back from widespread distribution until they fix that issue. So we had like three people in the last week run into that problem.
Yeah.
All right. Don't be first is the bottom line.
Yeah, man, ain't that the truth? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question and a comment.
Okay.
So you're there. Many, many times you guys have talked about removing the temp files. I tried to do that. Back in the XP days, basically you just did a fresh reboot, search for temp, and delete them all. The ones they were using didn't delete. It was easy back then. Is there a strategy or a way to find the temp files you can remove? I was looking the other day, and I was finding things like old Windows, which I presume I can delete, but I'm not sure I can delete them.
Here's the deal. There's a step-by-step in the Security Tango.
Yep.
Under Windows, there's one for 7 and 8, and there's another one for 10. And you can just follow the one for 10, obviously, or 7 or 8, depending on what you've got. And that gets rid of many of them. Not all of them. Nothing really gets rid of all of them. And this is one of the things that we've been complaining about Windows since Windows 3. Is that Windows in many ways the culprit really is Office. It does not get rid of its temp files. It's easier to do if you have, if you're not using Windows, if you're using LibreOffice or whatever, it's much cleaner. But the fact is that Windows leaves temp files. It always has, and I suspect it always will. And cleaning up those temp files is not hard. Steve's putting up a pointer.
Microsoft has their own disk cleanup that finds most temp files and system files. Doesn't find them all. And some of it is your undo ability. There's going to be a lot of the old Windows you saw, and there might be old not Service Pack, KB updates.
KB updates.
So you can roll back to before that update was installed, so it has to keep all those old files. So when you delete that old Windows file, that means you can't roll back to the old version. Now, you may not need to. The idea is you put the new version in, see if there's any problems. If there is, you roll back. If there are no problems, you forget, and all the disk space is being used.
Right.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Now I have sort of a comment. When I call into the show, anybody calls into the show.
Sure.
We get the music until we're queued up. And so it's difficult to listen to your show on and had the Muzak playing in my ear waiting for me to for someone to talk to. Oh. Once you're queued up, we get the show over the phone. But until then, all you get is the Muzak.
That must be the new box they put in. So you're right. you're not getting the live air on the hold?
Correct.
All right, we can talk to
management
about that. I can't promise anything, of course, but we can certainly talk to them about that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for your help today, gentlemen. Have a good day.
Have fun. Thanks.
Yep.
We don't know.
One of the phone link boxes died last week, didn't it? They had to replace something.
Yep. And just another indication of where your dollars go when you become a subscriber. Or a member of Jazz 90.1. We are honored, and we use that money to keep the station running as opposed to, anything else, quite frankly. All right, our next caller is Art from Victor, New York. Hi, Art, what's up?
I have a couple of questions about Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I've seen some, one of the Better Buy stores, they have reconditioned or returned units for sale.
Yep.
At a reduced price. Is that worthwhile for someone who wants to get started with a Chromebook?
Absolutely. It in particular matters how long the warranty is.
The big issue with return and reconditioned units like that is it means somebody bought them and returned it.
Right.
Did they return it because they didn't like it, or did they return it because it was broken in some way?
Yeah, and something was acting up.
So if you get a decent, if you, and decent is a sliding scale, right? If you pay $100 for a Chromebook and it's got a 6-month warranty, that's pretty decent. If you pay $200 and it's got a year warranty, that's also pretty decent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to be the sliding scale is yours, not something that's
and usually on a Chromebook, I would say you could tell whether it's working right faster than you would on a desktop.
Right. And certainly as long as you can read the screen and as long as all the keys work and as long as you can plug stuff in and that all works.
And there's no
you should be fine.
Missing on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you should be fine. And I'll tell you one thing. I have the very first Chromebook I ever got was the original Chromebook. It was the reference model. They weren't even selling them yet. This was one Google made in order to show manufacturers what should happen. That Chromebook still works to this day.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sanguine about new, used, whatever, when it comes to Chromebooks. There's so little that goes wrong. If you're not typing on it with a hammer, you're not going to hurt it. And if it runs, it'll run till it, you know, like we said earlier in the show, everything dies eventually.
Yeah, but usually a major failure happened in the first few weeks or months. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know,
well,
whatever you buy.
My problem is I don't have internet service. So I would be using it in the library.
Yep.
The Wi-Fi system.
Sure.
Now, I don't have email or anything either. I probably get the Gmail.
Right. The basic deal here is you sign up for a Gmail account. That account is the same. That username and password is the same username and password you use to log into the Chromebook.
Okay.
That means that you now have access to Gmail and a calendar and the Google Drive and Google Keep and all of the Google products that are specific to you now. So you have your Gmail, your Drive, your et cetera, et cetera. So
now, how is security in the library Wi-Fi system as far as the passwords go?
Well, the Google system is all running on HTTPS. When you look at the URL, that S stands for security.
Right.
So as long as you're seeing that, you're pretty secure. Is everything 100% secure? Of course not. But it's awfully good at being secure. One of the things Google is good about is they're horribly paranoid about people stealing their stuff. So they try, at least, to be very, very good with security.
Now, I also don't have a credit card.
Okay.
Is that going to be any problem with the Google services?
No, all the Google services I mentioned are absolutely free.
Okay.
You can pay for certain upgrades, for example, and things like that. But no, if you want, you know, if you wanted to buy a book, you'd have to have a credit card or a PayPal account or some other thing.
What I would mainly use it for is surfing the net, and my main interest is downloading semiconductor data sheets or something, so I can put it on the computer and then review them, you know, work on them at home.
All free.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, Chromebooks are a fairly inexpensive way to do any of that stuff. One of the things you'll find is that the less expensive Chromebooks have a little less storage available to them than obviously the more expensive ones.
Yeah,
but they all have
the bigger ones with
right.
What is it?
64 gig or whatever. Right. But all of them have USB ports, and many of them have SD card ports. So you can always, you know, you're downloading your data sheets, you can collect them on an SD card and remove them from the internal storage.
Ah, good. That's nice.
Yeah, so, you can always keep them, just not necessarily have access to them all immediately
the
time.
Yeah, that's no problem.
Right.
So I'll have to trade in my IBM 5150 boat anchor now.
Oh, no, I put it, it's a shrine now.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Collect them?
Not that I know of. 5150
with the loaf of bread size, 160 meg hard drive?
Oh, you have the 160. I had 20. Ooh. I had two 20s in my machine, and I felt so rich.
You want to upgrade to 160, Matt?
Right, and those are 20 meg, not 20 gig.
Yeah. Right.
Right. God bless you. This 5150 was the original IBM PC.
Yeah.
If you folks go look that up, you're going to see the old original box. Man, I got a warm spot in my heart for that.
Twin 5 1/4 inch floppies.
Exactly. And I have a warm spot in my heart for that machine.
Only weighed 40 pounds.
Well, yes, exactly.
Yeah, they make a good boat anchor, just like the old color TVs originally.
Yep, exactly right.
you know these phone calls for fixing up your computer?
Yeah.
I got one a while ago, and the guy asked me what computer I had. So I told him I got an SX64 Commodore.
There you go.
And the phone went silent for a second, and then in the background I heard the noises that you'd hear in a Chinese restaurant kitchen. And then the next thing I know, phone goes click.
Yep, exactly right.
So go to the start menu.
Right. So find the third floppy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, excellent. Art, thanks for the laugh.
Okay, thank you very much.
Have fun. I loved my 5150. What a machine. The original IBM PC out of Rat's Mouth, Florida.
$100 on eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
Working? Yeah, no.
It doesn't say.
It doesn't matter. Nobody's going to turn it on anyway.
So here's one for $950 that includes the monitor and the floppy drive.
Oh,
and a printer.
And the printer. Was it the thermal printer? Doesn't say. Those were amazing machines for their day. Amazing machines for those day.
Yeah, I can remember back in the day, my jobs was to go around and put in.
It's an Epson impact printer.
5 meg hard cards in those. Mm-hmm. 5 and 10 meg hard cards.
Yep. So
yep.
Megs.
So long ago. Oh,
when
yeah.
Megs was huge.
The Apple Cider, S-I-D-E-R, which you added to the Apple III, was a 5 meg machine.
You bought this at Computerland.
There you go. Well, there's Computerlands all over the country.
That's true. It'd be cool if it was the one here.
It would be. But those were pretty cool. I mean, 5 meg. And it held every program that a business user could want and had plenty of room for data. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, members board of Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Reich.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Is this the Lunatic Fringe?
That we are it. We are definitely it. Our callers.
Oh, no, that's Eminence Front, not Lunatic Fringe. Sorry.
Right. And we have Larry from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I heard you, Nick, a while back say that you wrote a script that runs a number of backup items and things like that in the background.
Yes.
I recently did the paid version of Malware Bytes, and so now it runs in the background all day. I have Sophos Home, which is a free version that I use as also for scanning the Mac, but it obviously, the home version, it doesn't do things automatically, and every now and then I forget to run it.
Yep.
So I guess my question is can I use Apple Script to program that to run automatically?
Well, yes.
But the Sophos Home does do real-time scan of downloaded files.
Okay.
So it will catch virus. I keep getting messages that I have viruses in my email,
right.
Windows virus coming through email. So the Sophos Home does do that. Apple Script is a high-level scripting language, and it depends on what script commands each program allows it to have. So you would open the Apple Script editor and then open that program and see if there's any Apple Script commands in it. Frustratingly, we're seeing Apple Script getting less and less implemented in third-party programs. You can probably make a cron job in Bash, but it depends, again, if those programs have command line equivalents with command line switches.
Okay. Now, I've actually never used Apple Script before, but I figure if I sit here a while and fiddle with it, I can probably figure it out.
Yeah, Apple Script is a pretty English language script language. English language script, does that make any sense?
Sort of. It's enough for us,
yeah.
Certainly.
And you basically tied together actions. So you open a program and you know, there's probably a run command. You know, So you're going to tell Finder to run Sophos going to be your first command.
And many of these programs do have command line equivalents. Not all of them, and again, I'm speaking out of turn because it's a Mac, although because there is essentially Unix underneath, you would mm-hmm. suspect that there are command line equivalents.
Yeah.
But for example, on my stuff, I do it all in cron jobs, and I can start all of the command line versions of all my software and add in whatever parameters I want. So I can say, you know, when you do your overnight scan, only search my home directory. I don't need you to search the system files because I know they're clean now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did that one once and they don't change.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to give it a shot. I'd like to not to forget to at least run a full scan at least once a day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I know it this morning I turned my PC on. Every now and then I'll turn it off and reboot it. And after it had been running 5 minutes, Sophos did come up and say, I see something coming through, but I've stopped it and I'm cleaning it up. So I know it's working, but I'd like to have something that says, hey, I don't have to worry about it. The machine's on 99% of the time.
Right.
I'm running at least a full scan once a day. So I'm going to give Apple Script a try. I figure if I play with it long enough, I'll get it. It'll either work or it won't.
Right.
And I'll be good.
And perfect.
There's a great book called The Tao of Apple Script, and I just found a free version at vintageapple.org. It's from 93, but
99% of the commands will be the same.
Yeah, and the procedures will be the same. You open the dictionary of the program you want.
That's the power of Apple Script.
The Tao, T-A-O.
Oh,
it was,
okay.
Back in the 90s, there was a big thing on the Tao of this and the Tao of that.
Oh, yeah.
The Tao,
now you're making me go back and date myself.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Got it. All right. Thank you so much. As usual, guys, you do a fantastic job.
Thanks, Larry. Good luck, and let us know how that works out.
I will. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Good for you, Larry. I love when people, you know, take the bull by the horns or the reins in their hands or whatever cliche you want. And go for it. I love that.
Just the vintage Macintosh book library.
Nice. There's a
the original Macintosh service guide from 1990.
Ah.
I mean, I probably have some of these on my bookshelf somewhere.
Well, if you're interested in older copies of books, by the way, and you're not an Apple person, you can also find them at archive.org. Archive.org has hundreds of thousands of things, movies, books, radio shows, everything.
I just found they have an Apple TV app.
Who they?
Archive.org.
No kidding.
And so it accesses all the movies and TV shows on archive.org and lets you watch them.
How very cool
on
is that?
On your Apple TV, yeah.
Nice. Hmm. Nice. Yeah, and they've got old movies, and not all of them are in great shape.
Yeah, but...
Because they're all pretty much original movies.
And how much you paying for that?
Exactly zero.
All right. So
yeah. And the minute it takes to download the app, I guess. I love archive.org. I find all kinds of things there. Anything that's theoretically everything is off copyright. Yeah, that's not necessarily always true.
Yeah.
But theoretically everything is off copyright.
Looks like they took a tip from Jimmy Wells there.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that too. You know, every once in a while you go onto Wikipedia and there's this big banner ad that says, hey, pay us. And now archive.org is doing it too. Maybe we should do that on Soundbites.
Yeah.
That's an idea. All kidding aside, there are any number of people who have outside of the stuff that we do for the station, right? The pledge drives for the station. Outside of that, there are a number of people who have over time hit that donate button on the Soundbite site, and I must tell you that I personally very much appreciate that because I'm the one who pays for the storage and that other stuff. Yep,
there's a bunch of AppleScript books at Internet now, including Danny Goodman's, who wrote AppleScript to begin with, right. And the Tower of AppleScript. Right. Sal Segoyan is the guy at Apple that did AppleScript, and he was pushing AppleScript for years, and he recently retired from Apple a couple of months ago, and we all cried.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we're afraid AppleScript's going to die off.
Well, and it's certainly possible. But I do want to thank every person who was kind enough to donate because, like I said, I paid to host that site, and I appreciate the help. Don't think I don't appreciate it. I appreciate it very, very, very much.
It's just, again, it's showing a small token of appreciation for the support and that you know they get out of that.
Yep, and generally, I will say I break even every year, so I'm very, very pleased that it has cost me very little out of pocket. And there was actually one year I made a couple of bucks. So, yeah, I know, and I didn't share it with you guys.
And it's sort of like our pay here.
Yeah, exactly. But so anyway, I do appreciate that. But anyway, get back to archive.org. Lots and lots of books, lots and lots of movies, lots and lots of television shows and radio shows and all kinds of stuff that's available on their site. All of it is free, although they, again, just like with Wikipedia, they would be honored and delighted if you would donate to them a couple of bucks
again,
a year.
Again, donations is what keeps things going. And, you know, that's right. Why earlier when we started the show, I was recommending that, you know, you pay for some of these other programs. We recommend, yeah, they're free, but to keep them going and keeping these programmers... You know, they're not going to get rich off of everybody just sucking off of it and, you know, absorbing it for free.
That is the truth.
And, you know, to get some of the stuff automated for them so that the updates and everything else is doing, why not? And it's not that expensive. It really isn't. You're not talking a bucket load of money here.
Right. You give what you can afford. You give $5 a year, $10 a year, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If enough people do that, then they can keep the site up and running. You know, in terms of our site, I pay a lot of money for storage because we've got archives running back years and years and years, and that costs money. And so thank you to those of you who have been donating to the website itself with the donate button on the website. But because I know what it costs me to have that storage available for those backups, I can only begin to imagine what it's costing the archive.org people. Yeah. So if you do use their stuff, it's not a bad thing to throw a few bucks at them as well. Nothing is free in this world, and having folks who are kind enough to help us defray the cost is a very good thing.
5,078 RPM records.
Yeah.
The Great 78 Project to scan all those 78 RPM records.
Yep. Yep.
How many people are old enough to remember 78 RPM records?
I am.
78 and 33 were competing standards at the time.
That's right. That's exactly right.
33 and a third.
33 and a third.
78s, 33 and a thirds. I actually have, I still have my mother's wind-up portable Victrola.
Wow.
That played 78s. And you crank the side up, put the thing down. It had a little speaker cone in the lid, and you listened to music. And it was an amazing thing. We had a whole bunch of albums. Obviously, we're Italian, so we had Sinatra and Como and like that. We also had Russ Colombo and a couple of other people. When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day. All right. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright and
everyone's
Steve
still
Ray.
Listening.
And the few people still listening didn't turn it off while I was singing Russ Colombo's In the Blue of the Night. And it's still, In the Blue of the Night. At any rate, we want to thank you all. We're done for this week. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It is 55 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other.